folks, and welcome to IT Life Radio. I'm your host, Executive Editor Dave Wagner. Every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern, IT Life Radio brings on special guests to talk about the most important things in the life of IT pros, including your career, technology, entertainment, and gaming. Today, we celebrate National Robotics Week with social robot maker Aldebaran Robotics. Aldebaran makes robots that have been used in schools, nursing homes, and can even integrate into your family life. Aldebaran's robot Pepper is described as an emotional companion that can sense your emotions and even play your favorite song to cheer you up. I have only one response to that. When are these robots going to take over our world? Clearly, they are replacing people, and they won't even need us soon. We decided to invite Aldebaran's Rodolph Galen to IT Life to tell us why his robots weren't going to destroy the Earth. Since December 2008, Rodolph has been responsible for collaborative projects at Aldebaran Robotics. He's led various teams at Aldebaran in several national and European projects. He is most notably the head of the Romeo 2 project involving 18 French partners, industrial and academic, in the implementation of a large robot for assistance to the elderly. Rodolph is the author of books Robot, Friend or Foe, How Can Reality Be Virtual, and The Robot, Man's Best Friend. Unfortunately, Rodolph is in France, so for time zone reasons, we had our own Kurt Franklin sit down with Rodolph earlier today. However, we are scheduled to have friends from Aldebaran in the chat room, so please join the live chat and feel free to ask questions about the interview. We think it'll be lots of fun. Here's Rodolph and Kurt. See you on the flip side.
We very much appreciate you being with us here on IT Life Radio. I wanted to begin with just a simple question. Can you define for our listeners what social robots are?
Yeah, hello, thank you for inviting me. And the social robot for Aldebaran is a robot with which you like to interact, you want to live with, and you want to exchange time, experiences with this kind of robot. So it's not a robot that could be like a slave that we had in mind before. It's like a companion with which you want to exchange experiences, exchange good time, spend good time, and make your life easier.
Well, what would you say is the state of social robots today? Are most robots the kind of creation that people do want to spend time with?
I wouldn't say that people are expecting social robots, but as soon as they meet one of them, they're happy and they understand that that's something very new in their life. That's probably when if you have had proposed smartphones to people 20 years ago, they would have said, okay, what is it for? But when you have one, you can't live without it. And I think when you met a social robot like Nao or Pepper, your vision on robots changes, and then you want to spend more time with them, to interact with them, and you want to know what they can do for you. So it's a really different way to present and what the robot can be, the new kind of robot.
Well, I'd like to explore a little bit something that you said in your last answer. When you were talking about when you see what a robot can do for you, I think we're all familiar with what robots can do on a factory floor, but in the non-industrial world, in the world of the home or the world of the office, what is it realistic to expect robots to do for us today?
The most common idea of people is they want to have a robot that clean the house, that put things together, that welcome you when you're back home and say, when during the day somebody rang on the door and it was the day of this of your flowers you were expecting. And so it's kind of a companion that stay at home and then can inform you of what happened at home. When you're at the office, you can ask your robot to check something special that you thought to turn the light on or off. And when you're back, it can help you, especially if you're an elderly people, for instance. It can read the emails for you. It can check your cardiac rhythm is good, and it can inform your doctor. It can remind you to take your medicine, for instance, or if it's very hot, it can say, okay, don't forget to drink a little bit. So for elderly people and for lonesome people, I think that the robot can easily do a lot of things that will make the life better. And for valid person, it could be an entertainer, someone, a robot that can remind you, oh, there is your football game on TV right in 2 minutes. Don't forget to turn the TV on. Or do you want me to bring a beer when you're watching your game on TV? So, and this kind of daily assistance. And then you can also, and that's our idea, is that the robot will learn day after day the way it can help you in the better way. So that's the idea of this humanoid robot that we're developing, that they are not dedicated to a single task as a vacuum cleaner is, but it can learn many new tasks and then make this task for you.
When you were talking about all of the different tasks that a robot can perform, as I was listening to your list, I was thinking that there are many of those tasks, the reminders for medication, for example, that can now be performed by, say, a smartphone or an application on a tablet device. When we're talking about social robots, is the physical form important? Do we need to attach something, and I'll say vertical rather than humanoid, to the robot in order to think of it as something more than simply an appliance?
Yeah, I think that the main difference is that the robot is like a presence. So, and it can, because of the locomotion, it can follow you. And if you forgot your tablet in any other room and it's time for your pills or for your medicine, so the tablet can ring and can shout anyway. You won't have the information. So the interest of the robot, it can stay close to you. It can still have an eye on you and watch and check that everything is fine. So that's the idea of bringing the information to you. And not only you have to carry your tablet or your smartphone to have the information with you. So that's for elderly people or people with a problem of autonomy or of locomotion, this makes a difference. And for valid person, of course, the locomotion is another way. It's to for instance find the object that you've lost, and the robot can move all around the place to find the object that you've lost. So the locomotion and the manipulation will bring new services that a tablet and a smartphone can bring. And that may be the more conventional perception of robotics, is locomotion and manipulation stuff. But also, we really think that for many people, the embodiment of these functions makes a difference, because when you see the now, you have a direct connection to this machine that you don't have with a smartphone. Considering your background today, you know what the smartphone can help you. But for many people, or elderly people, or even some people today, smartphone is just a kind of gadget. But the robot is a real presence and can be considered as a companion and much more than a tablet or smartphone. And sometimes it's silly to talk to objects, but when you have a robot, a social robot in front of you, nobody thinks you're silly to talk with such a robot. And it makes the interaction much easier and more fluid.
When you were talking about the idea of a robot bringing information to you, of course, that starts to take us from possibilities at home to possibilities in an office or in a workplace. Do you see social robots also entering the workplace, the office environment? And if you do, would they have different functions there than they have in a home?
Yeah, our vision is much more at home, because the companion, the social robot, is for your own well-being. And I think in the office, most of the work we do, we can be done only by human being. And of course, if you are very silly staff, you can use robot. But in the office, that is much less what we have in mind, and we think there is less need of such a robot at the office. Of course, in some public places, you can have robots to welcome people in a proper way, that SoftBank does with the paper robot in their shops. So at the office, but working in presence of the public, the robot can be used to welcome the public, to assist them waiting for a real human being can to come to people to talk with them. So in that context, yes, the robot can be used in the professional place, but not really at the office, because at the office, I suppose your work has to be done by real people. It's a high level job, and robots are not ready for that and not really relevant for that.
I think I'm comforted by the idea that there are some tasks that will remain the realm of the human. But to turn back then to the social robots at home, I wanted to ask about why we seem to need the robot to be social. Do you think that it's because it is bringing information to us, coming toward us rather than something we approach? Or is there just the basic human need to interact with something, whether it's another human being or a pet or a robot?
Bringing information is just one feature. But as you say, I think that the idea of interacting in a natural way is something people are really want. And because we don't want... That's a natural way to interact with objects, talking to them, and most of the social interaction that we propose is based on dialogue. And the fact that you can dialogue with a robot, you can point something with your finger, and that the robot will turn its head to see what you're showing to it. That's really changed the way you interact with a digital object. And that's really the difference between the social robot and any other device, digital device. And that the way you interact with a pet, you can do it with my cat because he's silly. But I think with a dog, you can show something with the finger, and then the dog will get the object that you point. And that makes really that creates a real a strong link between the man and the pet, or with the man and the robot, to have this very simple, intuitive way to communicate and to share experiences and tasks.
Well, I must say that if I'm going to have a robot in my home, I hope that its level of obedience is closer to that of a dog than of a cat. I know that there are people who will look at this and say, today there are home healthcare workers, there are personal assistants, and other human beings who can fulfill some of these tasks. And we always hear, when we talk of robots, about the danger of robots taking jobs from human beings. Is that something that concerns you when you're thinking of social robots in these contexts, in the home, helping to care for people?
Yeah, of course. sure, that's something we have to deal with because it's a natural worry. And frankly, what we have experienced today is that the robot cannot replace the human being. As you said before, there are many tasks that the robot can't fulfill and probably will never be able to. And but what we know in Europe and probably in the United States the same, we never had enough people to take care of people. So you have two solutions, or you have three solutions. First, you leave the situation as it is. Second solution, you change the society to have enough people to take care of lonely people. And the third solution that we propose is that we propose robots to take care of people when they're alone, when waiting for the human assistance. It's good for them to have a robot that can call, that can warn somebody if there is a problem, and that can take care of the people or the person waiting for human assistance. That is, that you cannot replace for sure for many things. And even we had a discussion with a company in Canada, and the guy is has a little company and is providing home assistance to elderly people. And he called us and said, while I'm working at people home, I would like to have this robot to make fun, to change, as an assistant for me, human being, to entertain the person when I'm here, and it's a plus for them. It's something they can in the offer. It's much better to have this robot that can because when the person is here, it cleans the room, it fixes the food, but while that time, it doesn't discuss with the person. So, and the robot can be a way to entertain the person when the real human beings are cleaning the house, and maybe later. And that's something that have been told to us in hospitals. Maybe later, the roommate will come in the room with the robot. And either the robot will discuss with the patient in his bed while the roommate will clean the room, or the robot will clean the room when the roommate will discuss with the person. It depends. Sometimes some elderly person doesn't want to talk with people, they just want to have the cleaning made done. But other time they don't care about the cleaning. They just want to talk with the person, with the home assistant. So with the robots, you can have both of the services, cleaning done and discussion and real interaction. So that's really an assistant and not a replacement of a human assistant.
Well, the other thing that we tend to worry about, and I'll admit that movie makers have helped encourage this worry, is that the robots will steal some of our autonomy, that the robots will start to limit what we're allowed to do. And I'm thinking about in a healthcare context might be where it starts, where a robot would try not to allow someone to do something that would be hurtful or might injure themselves. Is this loss of autonomy and freedom on the part of humans a legitimate worry when it comes to social robots?
Yes, I think that's a good question. That's something we have to manage, and we have different ways to do it. First, don't forget that the robot is a machine, and we decide what the machine does or doesn't. So, and I really, when you mention science fiction movies and so on, that's something that really often appears. The robot decides someday that he won't obey anymore to the human creator. It can't happen because the role of the robot, that is a machine, is to do what they ask, what we ask to it to do. And in the other way, we had this discussion with elderly person, and they told us we don't want the robot to do what we can do, what we still can do. And the robot has to know the limitation of each person, and just to bring the assistance when it's needed. For instance, we had a PhD thesis about that. The robot is able to see when the person asks to the robot, give me the water, the robot can say, hey, your arm is long enough, you can take the water by yourself. So here's the robot, it doesn't disobey, but it say, I know that considering the context, you can do it by yourself. So please do it because it's better for you to move. And if this person says, yes, but my arm is painful, so then the robot will do it. But I want to mention this example to show that the robot is able to take a point of view and to consider what I'm able to do, and then just to do what I can't do by myself. And of course, it's a classical question in robotics, when social robotics. For instance, if you drink, I know it, but I won't tell it on the radio. I know that you drink too much, but for instance, I can ask your robot, please check that Kurt doesn't drink too much, and then the robot will hide the bottle for you from you, and then you can say, okay, but the robot is not my friend anymore because he doesn't leave me to drink what I want. So that's a different, that's a real problem, and I think we have to find a solution for that. Who gives the order to the robot? If it's your robot, if you pay the robot, you give the order to the robot. And if the robot has been paid by your insurance company, to be sure that you will be reasonable with drinking, then they will program the robot to maybe limitate your drinking.
When you're talking about the example of the drinking, I'm thinking that suddenly the robot sounds less like a friend and more like a family member.
I'm afraid.
But you know, it does bring up, it sounds almost like, and especially when you talk about the question of who is paying for the robot, perhaps an insurance company or an employer, it sounds like social robots are actually on this continuum of devices that we are in a conversation about all over the world today, from the small sensors that we wear when we exercise, on the small end, through the devices that do attach to our smartphones, all the way up to social robots. Do you see them as on that continuum, or as something entirely separate?
No, you're right. That's a continuum. And we think that the robot can be more relevant if it's connected to all the smart devices that are around you. And it can detect with maybe the tag you have on your shirt that your heart is beating too fast, and then it can say, the robot can come to you, say, oh, maybe you're tired or exhausted, excited, so maybe you can have a rest, or do you want me to bring something? And it will really increase the power of the robot to be connected to all these devices, these smart objects. And we see the robot at the, sometimes we call it the ultimate interface to the digital world, because it can be connected to not only the cloud and all the services that can be brought by the cloud, but also to all the smart objects around us in home that you wear on you, and to take everything into account to propose a better service and to be as useful as possible.
Well, we very much appreciate you being with us today. And before we let you go, I wanted to ask you to look forward 5 or 10 years. And in that, depending on your viewpoint, either very long horizon or very short horizon of the next decade, how good can social robots be? Just how far could they go in that time if we allowed them to?
I think within 10 years, the social robots will be like the smartphone we have today. It means something that almost everybody will have, and will configure in the way that it makes his life easier. You know, on your smartphone, you probably don't have the same application as mine because we are not doing exactly the same thing. So the robot can be configured, and you will have, a store, online store to download the application you need. And if you don't find it, you can teach the robot to do something new, and then you can share this new ability of the robot with other robot owners. So that's really what I see. That's a robot that lives at your side and that can teach with you everything you need as assistant and as a service. And then you share all these new abilities with other robot owners.
Well, it does sound like a compelling view of the future. Rodolphe, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you very much.
Again, that was Kurt Franklin with Rodolphe Galen from Aldebaran Robotics. I hope you enjoyed the interview. I was pretty amazed by Rodolphe's prediction that within 10 years we're all going to have robots. I'll take mine now, please. There's a really great chat going on in the chat room if you haven't joined that yet. We have Laura from Aldebaran answering questions. She is the EVP and CMO of Aldebaran, so she definitely is an expert that can help you answer your questions. Rodolphe couldn't join us because he is in France. The time zone difference made it hard for us to get there. So please join the chat if you can. Before I sign off, let me tell you that next week's guest is Deborah McLaughlin, best-selling author of The Renegade Leader, 9 Success Strategies Driven Leaders Use to Ignite People, Performance, and Profits, and also author of the new book Running in High Heels, How to Lead with Influence, Impact, and Ingenuity. We're going to be talking about leadership, particularly leadership strategies for women. Should be a great show. I hope you tune in for that next Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern. In the meantime, I'd like to thank our guest, Rodolphe Galen, and I'd like to give a special thanks to Kurt Franklin for pinch hitting on that interview. And most importantly, I'd like to thank you guys for coming to IT Life Radio. We'll see you in the chat.